Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Kevin Durant is a Houston Rocket, or he will be as soon as the trade is made official in a week and a half, something like that. NBA draft tonight, by the way. If there's any bigger dichotomy right now between two of the major sports in their drafts, it's what was once a marquee night for the NBA, the NBA draft, is now an afterthought, and they've turned it into a two-night afterthought now, the NBA has.
I don't know if you and I were kind of talking about how do you change that if you're the NBA, and if maybe, you know, people know who Wembanyama was, despite him not having played in America because he was a social media sensation.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the NBA could do to create more social media sensation or buzz about some of the international players or one-and-done type guys, but it's not ideal right this
Well,
moment.
It's really hard when your draft is literally 3 days after your season just ended, too.
Yeah, there's no time to build. You're right. If you look at the NFL, you get a couple months of people kind of getting educated about who these guys are.
Oh, dude, you get the combine, and you get free agency plunked down right in the middle there, and then the draft.
Well, and I think you look at even if, because we talk about NBA second round picks, how it's more like a fifth or a sixth round pick in the NFL. And yet, I think the fifth and sixth round picks are more discussed, like at large amongst Americans, than the second rounders in the NBA.
No question. Especially when one of them is Shedeur Sanders.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true.
Big time discussed fifth round pick. All right, so Kevin Durant, I know there's a lot of you out there that probably have to come to grips with things that Kevin Durant is on your team, because I've talked to you. And I know, I will say this, that the reaction to you and I bringing up Kevin Durant over the last couple of months as a possibility for the Rockets, the reaction to that we got via social media, the text page, etc., greatly different than the reaction in the Twitter poll that I put up a couple of days ago, which is, anytime we would bring up Kevin Durant, you and I, Seth, over the course of, you know, May and early June, no KD. No, please no KD. That would be to me, that was the majority of the reaction, was people did not want Kevin Durant. And that's before you knew what the Rockets would give up for him, admittedly, because I think even the most staunch anti-Kevin Durant person would agree, like, this is less than what we thought it would be, or less than what was thrown around out there in rumors. But the reaction in the poll that I put up earlier this week, 90% of the people were either okay with it or over the moon about it. And so at least some of the fan base is reconciled. But we've been here before. We've been here with Dwight Howard. We've been here with Chris Paul. We've been here with Russell Westbrook before.
And I think, just real quick on that, I think the actual compensation was a big part of it. When people were thinking about, wait, should the Rockets trade for Kevin Durant, in their minds, and this is in my mind, your first thought is, well, you can't give up. You can't give up Jalen Green and Şengün, or you can't give up Amen Thompson. You can't give up
all of those first round picks.
Yeah, in my mind, it was usually a couple of young core players, and that's my first gut reaction was, well, if it ends up being a couple of the young core players, God no, that's sacrificing your future. So that was a big part of it, I think, for me and others.
Yeah, probably so, and that's reflected in how, you know, people, I think people feel generally pretty good about the trade, even if you don't like Kevin Durant. But I'm guessing there's still a lot of Rocket fans that have to come around emotionally on liking and embracing Durant. You're going to get that opportunity. So if we can learn from the past, Seth, we can learn, how did it go with us trying to reconcile our feelings about three players who I think Rocket fans were not maybe crazy about when they arrived, or, you know, before the Rockets got involved with them. Let's start with Dwight Howard, 7-time All-Star before he got to Houston. Most people think of his time in Orlando, but he spent that one weird year in L.A. where they tried to put a super team together with Dwight Howard, an aging Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash aging, and then I'm missing one. I know Ron Artest was on that team. I'm missing one other one other. Oh, Pau Gasol was on that team too.
Well, and we saw a little bit of a prelude to what would end up happening in Houston, which was all kinds of rumors that Dwight and one of those stars didn't get along very well.
Yeah.
And then Dwight kind of, who was it? I can't remember which player it was. But Dwight was posing with the player in the training room saying, hey, we're cool. Same thing happened in Houston when there were reports that Dwight and James Harden didn't ever eat together or anything.
This is what I think you're thinking of. Because I have it in the bullet points as to why Dwight was probably not well liked. Stan Van Gundy was doing an interview talking about in Orlando.
I remember that as well. It's relevant.
Stan Van Gundy was doing an interview with the media in Orlando when everybody knew there was drama between Dwight and Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah.
And out walks Dwight Howard just after Stan Van Gundy told the media that there's problems between the two. Dwight walks out and puts his arm around him and tries to act like nothing's wrong. And everybody's like, your coach just said that you guys aren't getting along right now.
Yeah.
You
know?
So he was disingenuous.
No, the exact same thing. And it happened. It was with Kobe.
Was it Kobe? Yeah.
Kobe put out some picture of them. There were always rumors that Kobe and Dwight didn't get along.
Yeah.
Dwight in that awkward moment in Orlando.
Yeah.
And then Dwight and James Harden. I remember when Ryder called it, I think, cordially incordial or something. They were never going to jive.
Yeah.
But we tried to take him in.
Yes.
And ignore how you might have felt about him beforehand.
We had a parade for him when he first got here. Remember that? They had a big reception for him out at that outdoor court. Across the street from Toyota Center, there was a big pep rally for Dwight Howard when he got here. Mm-hmm. We tried our best, man.
We tried really, really hard. We acted like Charles Barkley and Shaq were just jerks.
Dummies.
For picking on Dwight all the time.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So I guess we kind of came around on him eventually, but then it all fell apart. You know,
just like it would eventually for James Harden, it was some of the stuff you saw in the playoffs for me. It was when Dwight would insist on getting...
touches.
They'd have to give Dwight touches in the low post early in a game just so he could try to prove Shaq and Charles wrong. And then Dwight would try to back somebody up who wouldn't move at all. And then he would try to dream hook it off into the stands.
Yeah, I would say we came around on Dwight maybe halfway. Like, we weren't fully all in on Dwight, but we were like, okay, let's see where this goes. Chris Paul, before he got to Houston, I think the main reasons why Rocket fans may not have liked Chris Paul, other than the fact that he was on the Clippers and you played him in the postseason that one year, and Chris Paul was generally outside of the teams he was playing for, I don't think a super popular guy, but the main things were he was a noted nut puncher, he had a reputation for punching guys in the nuts, and he was the reason why Kevin Durant was on Golden State in the first place. He was brought here to beat Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
The only reason Kevin Durant was on Golden State is because Chris Paul was the president of the Players Union when they got this big influx of cap space, and you could have either smoothed it out and not taken all the cap space at once, or you could take it all in one year. Well, Chris Paul, as the head of the union, spearheaded the effort to take all that cap space, put it into one season. So it's basically like every team all of a sudden had a max guy they could go sign.
They could sign whoever they wanted.
So the Golden State gets to sign Kevin Durant. And a year after they won 73 games the year before, and they'd already won a title without Durant. So that was the reason to hate Chris Paul. I ended up liking Chris Paul just because that team won a bleep load of basketball games.
Yeah.
That was easy. You know, like the Dwight thing, they were still like a 2 seed, a 3 seed, a 4 seed. Like, they were winning like 50 some odd games. Chris Paul got here and they won 65 freaking basketball games.
And the fun thing about that was kind of Houston against the world, or Houston against, the world against Daryl Morey. When immediately people were like, oh yeah, this is going to work out great.
Right.
Two ball dominant guards. How are you going to get them on the court together? And they figured out just how to manage it and platoon it and make it work out just fine all the way up until Chris Paul's hamstring failed him.
Yeah. Yeah. I came all the way around on Chris Paul. Whereas with Dwight, I was maybe a little shaky on, like, I was like Chris, I liked having Chris Paul. I thought Chris Paul brought a maturity to the team too.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why James Harden ended up not liking playing with him. Chris Paul liked to go home after the games. James Harden liked to go to the strip club after games. I mean, there's a little difference in culture right there. Who knows?
That was the same. All the guys that got paid after that salary cap ballooning, like Ryan Anderson and guys got these huge contracts.
The Rockets signed Eric Gordon. The Golden State Warriors signed Kevin Durant. The Rockets signed Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon.
Ryan Anderson, 4 years, $80 million.
Four years, $80 million. Not good. Not good at all. Eric Gordon was fine. I was fine. That deal worked out okay. I think that deal aged fine. Like, Eric Gordon was supposed to be a secondary scorer for you, not an all-star. I think I worked out okay.
Ryan Anderson, it was extra annoying because the Rockets have been going after him repeatedly for multiple years.
Yes.
And then finally, it's almost like, oh, we can finally buy that my dream car that I always wanted.
Yeah.
And the mechanic tells you, well, it's actually been through a few major accidents and has current water damage. And you're just like, my dream car.
No, no. And I'd like, and I'd actually like to pay triple what it would have cost us 3 years ago.
You're still, your eyes are still glazed over. Yeah. Ryan Anderson is my dream car.
Now, Russell Westbrook was the one, if you're just getting in your car, Seth and I are kind of, we're talking about the embracing of Kevin Durant that will probably ultimately take place with all of you, and we're using history as a roadmap for this. Kind of came around on Dwight Howard. I came around all the way on Chris Paul. I thought he was great for the Rockets, other than the hamstring issue, obviously, in the Western Conference Finals. Russell Westbrook was the toughest one for me that they brought in, a star with the intent of competing for an NBA championship. I hated his stupid triple-double record that he had because it felt so manufactured. I thought he was a little overrated, even back before, you know, I thought Russell Westbrook was a little overrated throughout his career just because of how inefficient he's been. Mm-hmm. He's a little arrogant. And then once he got here, they had to blow up the team just to accommodate his playing style, you know?
That might have been the shortest grace period and stint with any of these guys, right? I mean, it's just not just by how many years they played for the team or anything, but he was on a short leash when he got here in terms of everybody's just patience or expectations. And then I guess the bright shining moment was the couple weeks of micro ball in February of 2020.
He had some good moments.
They looked like a really competitive team when they had a bunch of small guys out
there. And he was putting up decent numbers even before that. But if you watch the team night to night, you're like, okay, well, this is not a smooth running machine right now. Like, Russ has a hard time being a complimentary player. Well, now he's old. But back then, like, he was going from a guy in Oklahoma City who had the ball in his hands 80% of the time. Like, everything ran through Russ, and now he comes here and everything runs through James, but Russ needs to get his touches. I found it fun early on rooting for him. I really did. I liked, he's a big energy guy. And as long as the energy is directed towards winning for my team, I'm like, this is fun rooting for him. And then you watch it for a couple months, you're like, this is not as much fun when you see how gunked up everything is.
I think if there's maybe one difference between Raphael Stone and Daryl Morey, and this is going to be way too broad and generalized, but just if I look at Daryl Morey, there was always an element where it felt like he did approach the game a little bit like you're just adding up stats in the box score. And as long as we can get guys that can shoot this many threes or make this many layups, just add it all up. History will tell you you've got a championship squad, except that it doesn't work out that way when you've got actual players that have to have a cohesive offense and everything. So Russell Westbrook and James Harden are the ultimate example of that.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Yeah. Look at their box scores and look at what they can provide. Right. Okay. But what are they doing for everybody else on the team? Whereas with Raphael Stone teamed up with Udoka, I think they have much more of a build it from the ground up and the stats will follow.
Yeah.
Don't act like, because he said it in that press conference, the points, when people talk about superstars, it's a lot about points, but there's a lot that goes into how they get those points. Are they the focal point of the offense, all of that?
I think that with the Westbrook thing too, Seth, there was a whole other layer going on where this was their Hail Mary to try to appease James. Like, James didn't get along with Dwight, so we pivot and we bring in some complimentary guys and make you the whole show with Eric Gordon and some other guys. That didn't work. Hey, I need another star. They go and get Chris Paul. That has a 2-year shelf life. The two of them hate each other at the end of 2 years. And I think the writing starts to get on the wall after James is not good with three different situations they've put him in.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you want now, James? I want Russell Westbrook. So they trade Chris Paul and a whole bunch of first-round picks. A lot of these first-round picks that Oklahoma City's been using to get so good came from that Russell Westbrook trade. I think even Daryl Morey looked at it and said, this is a really clunky fit between these two. But they had spent the better part of that decade catering to James Harden. Like, okay. And then what happens? That whole thing falls apart, and then it just gets blown up.
It's like when you take a babysitting job and you show up all prepared with all different games and activities, and the fifth thing you try with the kid in 10 minutes, he's still saying, no!
Right, right.
You're stupid.
Okay, I know this kid's...
I gotta,
I know this kid's not going to like Clue, but I got to try Clue. Maybe he'll like it. So as far as Kevin Durant goes then, Seth, I would say his main transgressions have been he's a little soft on social media, right? Or he's chippy on social media at the very least, kind of rabbit ears, thin skin, rabbit ears, whatever you want to call it. And he ganged up with the Warriors to win two titles, which I think the league, by and large, still dislikes him for.
And he did it after being eliminated from the playoffs by the Warriors.
By the Warriors,
was the big part about it. That dynamic really was what added gasoline to the fire.
Yeah.
If he had gone from a bad team or something, I think people would have been a little bit more forgiving of it. But it was very much that feel of like, oh, you can't beat him, join him.
Coughed up a 3-1 lead to the Warriors.
As far as the social media stuff goes, and this was my take long ago. I've said this about Kevin Durant for a long time, so this is not recent. I haven't flip-flopped since he came here. I am always intrigued that Kevin Durant will kind of clap back at random dudes on X or on social media, and people will point to it as evidence that you're soft.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's such a great display of how the whims of society change over time. Yeah. We're not that far removed from an era where if somebody insulted your name, you could challenge them to a duel. And that was the manly thing to do.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's like, oh no, if you respond at all to words, you're soft. Mm-hmm. As long as he's in a good headspace and he actually, like, the hardest thing for guys like that is to know how big should the chip on your shoulder be and what should fuel it. I think Kevin Durant, by evidence of his actual play, has found the right balance of, you know, keeping a chip on your shoulder, mixing it up, but knowing that ultimately you're not going to ever win over 100% of the fan base.
He's the best of all these guys as a player, and it's not even close, in my opinion, in terms of the player that they're getting currently and in terms of the player that he's been. 15-time All-Star. He's been something else, man. So I'm excited about it. People weighing in on this on the text page. I came around on Dwight and Russ, but was fully intending to continue my Derek Fisher hate. I dislike Derek Fisher as well. He was a Rocket briefly. Chris Paul busted his ass and wanted to win. Dwight is a dope. Harden is an absolute... Oh, I can't say that on the air. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess out of all four of those... Well, the previous three that we discussed, Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
I can't remember if you did it or not, or if I... Yeah, Chris Paul 100% was the guy that ended up... You did the biggest turnaround on.
Yes.
He was doing everything... I mean, the reason his hamstring eventually got injured in that series was he was doing everything.
He's doing heavy lifting,
he was playing his butt off and playing heavy. Like, he was doing everything he could to win that series.
Yep.
I'm mad at Chris Paul's age and hamstring, but I flopped on him 180 degrees.
Texter says, Durant said in his Kay Adams interview that he's trying to get Westbrook. He was asked about Westbrook. He didn't say he's trying to get Westbrook. He barely would commit to the Rockets being a good basketball team with him.
I implore all of you for your mental health. You got to really, anytime you see Durant or the Rockets mentioned with Westbrook right this moment, take a deep breath. See if the account is an aggregator or if the headline is misleading, because it's out there all over the place because it's great. It gets a lot. There are so many satire accounts right now that are tweeting about Russell Westbrook to the Rockets because it's getting huge engagement.
Yeah.
Because people, they see Westbrook and their brain stops working. They're like, oh, this must be true.
He moves the needle, man. When you throw him in a tweet, he's very polarizing. Yeah. To that point, text message, Russell Westbrook just isn't likable. I get that. He by and large is not. He's very chippy with the media. He can be very off-putting. We saw it in Denver at times this year. He can be very off-putting.
Well, and it's just by his style of play. He openly admits that, I'm going to lose some games
for
you, and I'm
going to
win some. And you're kind of like, all right, that's cool that you recognize that in yourself. Is there a way that he's full bore? He's past the point where he could learn and change and tweak a little bit, because now he is adamant that, hey, that's just who I am.
Yep. A few more on the Rockets here, and then we'll get to the Texans. The McNairs were on Texans All Access earlier this week. They had some interesting things to say about flag football that I want to get to a little later this segment. Kevin Durant, let's hear from Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, this is actually from a couple of years ago. Kevin Durant was on one of those, I think it's hashtag NBA Hoopervision is what it's called, and he's on with like three other guys just doing like Mystery Science Theater type commentary on a game on the screen right there. and just giving thoughts on things. And Kevin Durant, Shangoon's name got brought up because I think it was a Rockets game they were watching. And it turns out Kevin Durant, this is like 2 years ago, loved him some Alperen Sengun.
They confirmed it to him when he dunked on. He was dunking on a couple people.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Dope. I didn't know he could get up like that. But he got, he was nice. I like him. I think he's going to be a good player. Like, he's going to be a nice player. Yeah.
And Sengun be swaggy coming through the game, yeah, too. I love it.
I ain't know nothing about him. I ain't know that much about him until
I'm
like, let me lock in on this dude.
He got quick. Passes. He be diving. Yeah. He nice. Yeah. I like Sengun.
I like his game.
Okay, that was 2 years ago. Now he's a teammate.
Two years ago.
Yeah.
He's changed. He's grown. The playoffs were good to him. I think that
Sengun?
I mean, as far as really learning those lessons that you have to learn,
yeah,
and going up against Draymond especially, the way Sengun just got knocked for a loop a little bit, and then we saw him kind of progress,
yeah,
and be a more physical player as you got. I mean, remember one of the early games, he just got shut down by Draymond Green,
yeah,
at the end of the game. And, like, yeah, I think Sengun, too, you can see all of the things that over time he can continue to polish and get better at, mm-hmm, and more fully round out his game. It's certainly not about raw talent or anything anymore.
Sengun's problem in that series was he missed way too many easy baskets.
Right.
He missed way too many shots in the paint that he normally makes. You know, like, he was not great shooting the basketball. But I think you're right. I think he showed toughness in that series. He looked like a guy in that series, Seth, that the lessons he was learning were going to be productive for him whenever the next playoff series rolls around. Whereas Jalen Green looked like a guy who maybe the playoffs ruined him. You know, like, he looked completely overwhelmed in that series.
You know who agrees as well?
Yeah.
A person that had pretty good seats for that series in Draymond Green.
Draymond Green, here's what he had to say. He's on the Pivot podcast. Here's what he had to say about how he played Sengun. He was very chippy with Sengun in that series, trying to teach the young man some lessons.
Sengun, boy, you were giving. Why you kept pushing the man, grabbing his arm, elbowing him in the ribs? But I did notice when Big Steve Adams came out there, you kind of calmed down a little bit.
You know what? With Sengun, number one, this is your first time in the playoffs. I got to test that.
Yeah.
He's 23 years old. He only getting better in this league. I got to test that. I need to try to have something mentally on you as I age into this career and you getting better in yours.
Yeah.
I got to test that. Mm-hmm. I gained so much respect for that young fella in that series because I told Fred this last night. In the beginning, he was folding. He was folding in the beginning. And he caught up and he stood up. And once you stand up,
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
We gonna go at it, but I ain't like, all right, I like that. Like, yeah, all right, cool.
Gain respect.
And I gain respect from him.
We all hate Draymond, but that's really cool to hear if you're a Rocket fan.
Well, that's how I know he's going to be good in sports media, because the great hallmark is, okay, any of those guys who are really good, Skip Bayless, like very successful, Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, Nick Wright, it would go into this category where there are a lot of people that 90% of the time you're like, this guy's an idiot. This guy's an idiot. Yeah. I hate him. But 10% of the time, you'll say, you know what? I mean, he makes some really good
points. When he's talking about your team.
I may have had my issues with Draymond in the past.
Yeah.
But he really eloquently states what I wish I were eloquent enough to state.
Yeah.
Yes. Good for you, Draymond. Okay. Now you've seen the light. Yes.
Let's put that to the test. I like that you said that. Let's put that to the test. You brought up Nick's name. Nick Wright used to sit in this very chair right here.
Yeah.
At
Nick,
Radio
I agree with much higher percentage of the time.
No question. I think Nick is very
Nick
smart.
Nick actually pays attention and thinks about stuff.
And has data to back up his opinions, and he makes good points, but I still think there's a significant part of the audience listening in their cars right now who Nick irritates. Let's put this to the test. I would imagine the Venn diagram of those people that Nick irritates that are also Rocket fans, probably a lot of crossover there. Here is Nick Wright on his show, First Things First, saying he's picking the Rockets to come out of the West.
I think I'll pick them to win the West.
Really?
I think they have a great blend of what we've seen works right now in the NBA, which is, you talked about the defense, bang. High-level coaching, no doubt about it. Depth and a guy who can get you a guaranteed 25-plus, which Kevin Durant still is. Like, there is no question about it.
Yeah. Makes a good point. I don't know. What do you think? If Nick irritates you, or all of a sudden you're nodding your head in your car going, you know, this Nick Wright guy, for the last 12 years, I should have given him a chance.
I do. I worry. I in every sport, I try to guard against thinking in terms of, hey, this is what works in the league right now. Because we tend to put patterns to things where sometimes there are no patterns. You know, remember, Golden State wasn't doing necessarily like, oh, this is the way you win a championship. But they were part of what became, oh, you can win a championship this way. excuse me. But I think first and foremost, do you put together a team that can win in multiple different ways?
Yeah.
And the biggest issue the Rockets had last year was they just simply were not good shooters. So you could win in a couple of specific ways, but when you rely on second chance points off of offensive rebounds in seven game series versus good teams, it gets a lot harder for that. So you look at the Rockets right now, and in any era of basketball, they're just a more complete basketball team. Mm-hmm. They've got more ways they can win right now. You take a lot of what they did well last year, and Durant doesn't detract from it at all.
No.
But you add into that scoring threat and that ability to space the floor.
I think a lot of times it's the team, to your point, that zags when everybody else is trying to do the same thing. You know, I think we saw that with the Patriots for a number of years. You know,
when nobody was, nobody gave it, you know, oh, the running game doesn't matter anymore. They became a running football team and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I think that's the case. You know, they're like, the team that created this whole last decade where the threes have become this big thing, it was Golden State who took the game to that level using all that outside shooting, and everybody's playing catch up for the next 10 years.
If you're trying to copy what the other teams are doing, guess who else is doing that? Every other NBA
team.
So when it comes to the managing the economics of it and all, that's why the Patriots were so good at they didn't identify trends, they created trends, partly because they realized things like, oh, wow, you know what? Tight ends are actually really undervalued. Slot receivers are really undervalued. Yeah. And we can get these guys with second and third round draft picks at tight end. We can get various slot receivers and turn them into something, and we don't have to pay them as much.
Yeah.
That was, with tight ends, it was like that forever.
Yep.
I mean, Gronk was making less than the 25th highest paid wide receiver at some point, or something absurd like that.
Yep, no doubt. And I think the Astros are that too. I mean, the Astros did a lot of revolutionary things that teams weren't doing, and the rest of baseball is still, in some ways, you know, the teams have caught up. Obviously, the Astros aren't as good as they were, but so many teams are cherry picking guys that do Astro things to run their organizations.
This is one of the things in one of the Morgan Ensel books that Nick Caserio recommended to me. That was one of the big points it made, was that you know, whatever advantage you have, whenever you gain an extreme advantage, technological or otherwise, its effect really starts when everybody else catches up.
Yeah,
you're not going to have that. So you got to constantly be looking for, where do I have an advantage? You're not thinking about the trends and everything as much as, okay, where are their weaknesses that I can exploit that other people aren't exploiting? And buck the trends. I don't care about trying to we need to try to look as much like the past three champions as possible.
I love how Nick Caserio is sending you titles of intelligent books to read, and he's sending me videos of Stone Cold Steve Austin driving in a beer truck to a Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
To each their own. Nick Caserio, very versatile.
Should I start to really try to learn about WWE to try to kiss up to Nick Caserio?
Might not hurt. I don't know. Be you, man.
I'm not going to. I was asking that just sarcastically.
Can't stand Nick Wright. That text came in.
No.
Nope, he's still a rat-faced twerp. That just came in.
You jerks.
let's shift gears here for a minute. This is Cal McNair being asked on Texans All Access about the upcoming season.
I think we have one of our best rosters.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have some young men that are really committed to winning and putting in all the work. And we saw that, on the field these last few weeks. And I can't wait to get started. I love to win. And I just want to win the next game we play.
I love that.
Cal's, yeah, they'd ask him for his prediction or something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, that's always the appropriate.
He's never going to do that.
What's the most important game? The next game. What's the most important play? The next play.
Yes.
Everything's just like the next rep. That's the most important.
Cal talks like, he talks like a coach, man.
Well, and unlike Shad Khan, he didn't idiotically come out and insult every previous player by saying, this is the best team we've ever. Last year, Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, or 2 years ago, said, this is the best team we've ever. Or no, it was last year.
Last year, yeah.
The best year we've ever, a team we've ever assembled. Yeah. And Jags fans unanimously are like, well, wait a second. They had some really good teams back in the day. What the hell are you talking about?
That would have been. That would have made Cal the second owner to insult you personally if he
Yeah. No, but as far as various Texans rosters from the past, I think one complaint we always had, going back to the really competitive teams that just couldn't quite get over the hump, is that they were way too top heavy. You go to 2012, and remember Andre says that going into the 2013 season, Andre was really concerned or noticed that, man, we got a lot of starters playing special teams.
Yeah.
Like, they had a bunch of stars and good, solid players, but the middle class and the journeyman level, it just wasn't as complete as this team. So that's where I feel like this is a much more well-rounded team than perhaps some of the other competitive Texans.
It is probably the deepest and maybe most balanced roster they've had, for sure, I think.
I mean, even if you look at – and that's borne out in the payroll. You know, Nick Neiman, the linebacker, is mostly a special teamer, and he's making a few million dollars a year on a two-year contract.
Yeah.
So they've spent resources on it, too. They genuinely care about special teams, and then that's something that flows over into the quality of your backups.
This was Cal and Hannah both on Texans All Access. Hannah talked about the team's involvement in USA flag football, which is an Olympic sport coming in 2028.
And it's relevant for one very specific reason.
Yeah, so we're gifting the 15U, 17U, and adult women's U.S. national teams exclusive She's Next gear. So they are going to be in L.A. next week for a week for USA Football's annual summer series. And that's where top athletes train, compete, and grow as players.
Okay, one more. This is from Hannah as well on flag football building towards the Olympics in 2028.
Absolutely. And with the NFL backing players who want to go play flag football, I think it's only going to get bigger before the Olympics. I think Josh Allen made a statement this past week about how exciting it is to be able to have that opportunity and actually represent your country in a sport that we all love and we know changes lives. So to do that in a flag football format is just the beginning. And to have the females be able to participate in that is huge.
Sorry, Hannah. Didn't mean to step on you there. This is, and immediately I thought, as I was watching this interview and seeing Hannah, just how passionate she is about it.
Oh, yeah.
And how much cool it was that Josh Allen had expressed interest in it. Yeah, there's totally going to be a Texans player playing.
Well, they got to make the team. You can't just put them on there.
If they make the team. You know, Brett Coleman, Texans fan who has a very successful YouTube channel, very, very smart guy. He spent the weekend watching flag football, and he said, you know, okay, I do think we need to step back a little bit and just assuming that NFL players are going to step in and be better than the guys who are doing it all year round because it is a much, much different game.
Yeah.
So if one of those guys really jumps into it and decides, oh, yeah, I really want to do this, then I think there's a real good chance. So is there a Texans player playing in the flag football? I think they're going to try. So I guess I can secretly hope that they fail to make the team. That Derek Stingley wants to play flag football, but fails to make
it. You know my feeling on these extracurricular international events. I don't want an Astro. I love the World Baseball Classic and what it represents. I don't want the Astros. I don't want any Astros playing in it. We saw some of the damage that it did to the Astros back in 2023, I think it was. Similarly, I would rather not expose the players on my favorite football team to the possibility of some sort of soft tissue rupture of some sort heading, because the Olympics are going to take place in July. This is going to happen right before the, it's the 2028 season, so it's several years from now.
It goes right up to, it abuts training camp. Depending on how the events are scheduled out, the ceremony, the final ceremony is after most training camps would have begun.
July 16th through the end of the month is what I saw the dates are for that Olympics 4 years or 3 years from now. So, me personally, maybe I'm being a spoil sport on, you know, what maybe the McNairs are hoping for here, because I'm with you. I think they would love to see a Texan. It can only be one, by the way. For those who don't know, you can't have more than one team. Each NFL team can only have one player representing for their country. There could be more than one Texan in the Olympics, but only one on the American team and maybe one on some other international team. You know,
I hope nothing. You know, the only thing I worry about is because the NFL is heavily involved in this is that I hope there's no heavy-handed like forcing of a few players. If NFL players don't really latch on to how to play flag football and really learn how the game's different and tweak their skills, which by the way would require a lot of time spent like working at a non-contact football thing in the off season. I don't like that. But I hope the NFL doesn't figure out a way to kind of shoehorn or force players onto the team.
If they don't genuinely
deserve it.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I think there's a danger of that. You know,
that's
the marketing element is big when it comes to this, you know.
The big entity that butters the bread and can offer a lot of finances and everything, and all of a sudden the boss's kid is playing wide receiver for your flag football team.
Exactly. All right, Payne.
Nothing dodgy would ever come out of the Olympics, Sean.
It's amateurism, or at least it used to be back in the day. Nick got me. We're getting Nick Wright text still. Nick got mad at me one time and then tried to call me at work back in 2012. That sounds like Nick. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Aaron Rodgers went on the Pat McAfee show yesterday and Southern belled the hell out of one big thing in his life. We will have that for you coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Oh, it's been great, man. I really enjoyed it. I had a great 3 days out there for mini camp with the boys. Did some individual work, but mostly just kind of watched on the side and talked to Arthur and Tom Arth. I had a good time, man. It's fun to... I was doing a bunch of events out there, so I got out there, went to Tomlin's house for a barbecue, went to Cam Hayward's house for a barbecue, did Cam's golf event on the Monday, had a good time. So just, meeting the guys, getting to know the guys.
Not that I care about Jets fans. I don't really. There's people I like who are Jets fans. I care about them personally, but I don't care about their Jets fandom. But, man, that was Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show yesterday talking about his time at Steelers minicamp. If you recall, a year ago, he missed Jets minicamp because he couldn't cancel his travel plans to Egypt. If I were a Jets fan listening to that cut, I would be livid right now. Like, we let you bring in all your buddies to come ruin our team.
We had Nathaniel Hackett. We spent 2 years with Nathaniel Hackett, or 1.5 years at least, with Nathaniel Hackett. And then you brought them all in, and then you had to run off to Egypt instead. And now I got to sit here listening to you basically say, you know, everything I was looking for, I kept running. I run into Egypt, run into Peru.
Yeah.
Everything I was looking for is right here at home in Pittsburgh.
Right here in Latrobe, where they have their training camp. Yeah.
It went to 2 barbecues.
Oh my God. I would be so mad if I were a Jets fan listening to that right now.
Wasn't Cam Hayward the one in the offseason that on some podcast basically said, like, listen, you either want to be here or you don't.
And he wasn't. Yes.
It looked a lot worse in the transcripts than it did with what he actually said. But Cam Hayward had a lot of headlines for basically, it made it look like he was telling Aaron Rodgers to poop or get off the pot.
Pretty much.
But apparently they're A-okay because they're eating grilled food together.
They're barbecuing together and going to Cam's golf events and things like that. The guy's doing like extra. Not only is he at minicamp, he's doing extracurriculars while he's there as well. So Rodgers is on McAfee. The thing that got the most attention was Rodgers saying this will likely be his final season.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is it. You know, that's why we just did a 1-year deal. Steelers didn't need to put any extra years on that or anything. So this was really about finishing with a lot of love and fun and peace for the career that I've had. I mean, I played 20 freaking years. You know, like, it's been a long run, and I've enjoyed it. And what better place to finish than in one of the cornerstone franchises of the NFL with Mike Tomlin and a great group of leadership and great guys in the city that, you know, expects you to win.
I watched a lot of this interview, Seth. We've got cuts from a little. We got one more that we're going to play that's just mind-blowing from Aaron Rodgers. That whole love peace thing was a theme throughout this interview. He talked in one particular juncture, he talked about, I don't really have a chip on my shoulder anymore. And I'm watching this and I'm going, if I were a Steeler fan, I would be terrified that this is my quarterback for the upcoming season.
This is where, like, hey, it's great that he does seem like he's just trying really hard to just genuinely enjoy the experience. And hey, we're here for the ride, which is awesome. If you're a jam band or something, it's not necessarily like, it's awesome if you're Fish, but it's not necessarily awesome when you want a type A personality who's going to drive and maybe might be deeply emotionally unsettled, but the only thing he thinks is going to fill the void is a championship. Yes, I want mentally unhealthy quarterbacks that are driven beyond the point of obsession to win, and Aaron Rodgers is the exact opposite.
Imagine if C.J. Stroud came into training camp and was saying, I don't really have a chip on my shoulder anymore. I'm just here for the peace and the love, and I'd be like, we're going to win five games this year.
There's an element. Some guys need that. You know, some guys need to back off a little bit and reduce the size of the chip on their shoulder. Some guys need to care a little bit less, you know, just a smidgen less to just be more free-flowing and everything. But it feels like Aaron Rodgers is, like he just took Quaaludes right before the big exam.
The size, there needs to be a chip. I'm with you, like, the size of it can vary, but you got to have some sort of edge. This Aaron Rodgers has zero edge to him at all.
Yeah.
And so, look, it's not my team. Knock yourself out, Steelers. Okay, this is the one I couldn't wait to play, especially for you, Seth. He goes off at one point in the interview about, for those who don't know, Aaron Rodgers got married in secret to somebody named Brittany, who nobody has seen. She's not been seen in public yet. Went off on the invasion of his private life that's going on.
Where are we at in society where that's like the norm now? That just because I'm not selling wedding photos to the magazines or leaking personal information or making a loving post on Instagram. And look, you want to do that? That's fine. It's your own prerogative. I don't care. That's just not what I want to do. I don't want to be a part of anything. I told you, when this is all done, I'm out. You won't see me. And I know that I've chosen to be in the public eye for one more season. But my private life is staying private. And any other ridiculous story that's out there about my family that I don't talk to, you know, they wouldn't know any information about me. Like, leave them alone. Like, and you want to keep stalking me on the beach and getting photos of me and Apollo? Go for it. I don't give a shit. But stop making shit up. And my private life is my private life, and it's going to stay that way. And I'm with somebody who wants to be private. And if and when she wants to be out and there's a picture, she'll choose that. And she deserves the right to that. But the entitlement to information about my private life is so f***ing ridiculous and embarrassing. Like, hey, do what you got to do, but just, you know, try and leave me out of a conversation, sports world. For a month. Try and just leave me out. My personal life, my professional life. Try not to talk about me. Try not to still be relevant.
He's the worst. God, I hate him. Shut him down.
No. But to mind you, he's doing this on a podcast that he's under no obligation to do in the off season in a dead time of the year.
He's getting paid.
And he concedes that he's put himself out there, you know, he's chosen to be a football player, but he does a lot above and beyond in terms of public appearances, where if you genuinely wanted to be as much of a private citizen as possible, you're welcoming the wolf into the door and then complaining about the wolf eating your Pop-Tarts.
He was on the Joe Rogan podcast like 3 weeks ago, not even talking about football.
The biggest podcast in the world. I don't know why there's all this intrigue into my private life and everything else. I'm going to go on the biggest podcast in the world.
He toyed with running for office year ago. Like, what are we doing? Like, hey, my private life, You are toying with and actually doing some of the most public things you can possibly do. It is a little weird that there has not been a sighting of his wife yet, right?
No. I think it's also a little bit of an indication of how much he's whining about much ado about nothing, and that athletes, by and large, do get relatively sparse coverage of their private lives if they choose to do it that way. And I mean, there's going to be a few whack jobs out there or paparazzi types that know they're going to. So he's getting that paparazzi treatment a little bit on a minimal scale compared to actual movie, you know, Hollywood celebrities and whatnot.
My favorite thing too, I have several favorite things from this notion that Aaron Rodgers, like, when did it become acceptable? Dude, I went to Hollywood on a trip with my family back in the early 80s. On every corner, there's people handing out pamphlets of where the celebrities live in town. Like, when did this start? Yeah. It's been this way since movies existed.
With Rodgers, I half expected that conversation to turn somewhere towards, like, and who actually runs Hollywood? I think the acting like you're just fresh off the bus and you don't understand how the world can be this way.
Yeah.
It's been this way since about the 1950s or so.
Yeah.
Really, blame the booming success that we had after World War II economically and everything that spawned from it. Yeah, that's pretty much been the deal.
Yes.
There's been extreme interest in the private lives of celebrities for about 80 years now.
When did this become acceptable? Yeah. I'm like, have you looked around? What are you doing?
The thing with Rodgers that's annoying is that this is what happens. It's when anybody is newly passionate about something, happens religion, like the zeal of the new convert. Yeah. In meditation circles or Eastern philosophy, which is more where Aaron Rodgers resides, you're trying to detach yourself from yourself as much. Mm-hmm. Understand, like, where you fit in the world and as part of the universe. So, you know, ego death is a big thing. And I've seen Aaron Rodgers use the term ego death a couple times.
Yeah.
As people strive to achieve ego death, this really annoying thing happens where they become really proud of themselves for how thoroughly they've killed their ego. And I'll tell you what, nobody is as detached from himself as this guy. That's where he is.
He's
killed his ego enough that his ego has become massively inflated.
That is a great breakdown. It is, he's walking, he's two-legged irony is what he is now, man.
It's the same as like with, you know, when people, sometimes when they're born again, there's a really rough period of a year or two where they cannot believe how unenlightened and how imbued with the Holy Spirit people are not compared to me.
Yep.
Just look at me.
I know.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Boy, I can't believe you guys, you idiots, are doing the exact same thing I was doing 6 months ago, are living like you do. Tisk, tisk.
That's why you got to watch on YouTube, because the way Seth has his hands on his hip and his chest puffed out adds much to the segment.
The tisk, tisk pose.
It is nice.
That's my power pose. The tisk, tisk.
The tisk, tisk. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Matt Young of the Houston Chronicle went deep yesterday on Scott Boras and the Houston Astros and their history. Why is that important? Because Jeremy Pena, arguably the most popular Houston Astros, certainly I think their best player right now, just signed to have Boras represent him for his next contract in a couple of years. We talked about a couple of the other players that were Boras clients yesterday. Didn't realize a few of these other ones that are on Matt's list here. Where do we think Jeremy Pena ultimately falls on the Scott Boras client list? Who's his comp going to be when his contract comes up? That's next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.